And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to this edition of the Hagman and Hagman Report. We're so fortunate to have so many great guests with us. And this segment, we have a very interesting, wonderful gentleman, former Navy SEAL. Well, I guess I don't think you're ever former. You're always a Navy SEAL. We're going to be getting into some tremendous information with this tremendous gentleman. You folks, you might remember some time back we had David Thomas on, wrote a book about a Navy SEAL. This is the Navy SEAL the book is about. And Joe's going to explain that here momentarily. Before we do get to our guest, I want to, of course, mention that this segment brought to you by Omaha Steaks. Go to omahasteaks.com. And when you do, in the search bar, put HH in the search bar for My Family Special Pack. Now, I've used this season for Christmas gifts. We've used this at the Hagman household for our own food purchases. OmahaSteaks.com. You know, if you're struggling to find the perfect gift for someone who has it all, the holidays, 2 weeks, really. Mm-hmm. What is it? 2 weeks, Joe? Yeah, 2 weeks.
Two weeks and a few days.
Yeah, I mean, they're coming very fast.
No, yeah, you're right.
So, get the perfect gift and avoid the malls, lines, and crowds. Do what we do and do it smart. And one of the smartest things I think that you could possibly do, go to omahasteaks.com. In the search bar, type in HH. They have this wonderful, this is a perfect gift. Let me tell you, Omaha Steaks and how. For just under $50, $49.99, you can get My Family Gift Pack when you go to omahasteaks.com and enter our code HH in the search bar. It's a 77% off, 77% savings. It was $215.90. Yours for $49.99. Now, in addition to this family gift pack, and I'm going to tell you what's in it real quick here, but before I do, you have to understand Omaha Steaks, it's kind of a one-stop shop. They've got they have so many unique gifts and gourmet items for gourmet food lovers. They've got the most flavorful tender aged beef. They've got seafood, poultry, pork, veal, lamb. They've got veggies, desserts, appetizers, anything and everything you could want. And they are the highest quality and offer one-of-a-kind flavor. Remember I mentioned My Family Gift Pack. Well, right now, Omaha Steaks is giving to you exclusive savings just to our listeners. Listen to everything you can get right now for less than $50. You can get two filet mignons, two top sirloins, two boneless pork chops, four boneless chicken breasts. Now, I could stop there, and you would have your money's worth, but let me go on. Four kielbasa sausages, four burgers, the 12-ounce package of all beef meatballs, four potatoes au gratin, four caramel apple tartlets, one Omaha Steaks seasoning packet. And boy, does that make the steak. Wow. It's steakhouse greatness. And, of course, plus, you'll get four additional kielbasa sausages free. Folks, I've had so many compliments on this, and I've had so much satisfaction from this. Go to omahasteaks.com, enter our code HH in the search bar, add the family gift pack to your cart, and get an immediate 77% savings. It's a gift guaranteed to be a hit, but don't stop there. Keep shopping, because you have the ability to get this gourmet food at reasonable and really tremendous prices. That's omahasteaks.com, HH in the search bar. Joe?
We got a real special guest lined up for the rest of the show this evening, and we're also going to do something interesting. We're going to have, in the last 45 minutes of the show, we're going to be taking calls with our guest, Chad Williams. Just a month ago or so, we had New York Times bestselling author David Thomas on. He is the author of Seal of God, along with Chad Williams, and this is the book that David Thomas discussed about, talked about while on air, and the main character of that book is our guest tonight, Chad Williams. And Chad's a great speaker. He's got a fantastic story, and he's going to lay out what he went through, not only to become a Navy SEAL, but what he went through as a Navy SEAL while he was deployed. And these stories are just amazing. So we're going to play a trailer first, and when we get done with the trailer, we're going to come back with Navy SEAL Chad Williams.
And by the way, his website is NavySealChadWilliams.com. NavySealChadWilliams.com.
Mm-hmm. So here goes that trailer.
Thank you. I remember graduation day was one of the happiest days of my life. My chest was puffed out, so proud to have that trident, the insignia that says I've become a SEAL. But at the same time, it was one of the lowest moments and most miserable moments of my life, because I realized it hasn't delivered for me what I thought it would. Being as miserable as I was, but I'm a Navy SEAL now, I decided, you know what? There's nothing left. I'm just gonna drink, go out, get in fights, just be careless. I don't care. I would have blood all over me sometimes, not knowing whose blood it was. I'm not cut anywhere. I remember thinking of this as sort of like a badge of honor, like, you know, I just don't care anymore. This is part of being a SEAL. So in the midst of this chaos and living like a rock star, going out, drinking, fighting, blacking out, I'd found myself agreeing to go to an event where a man by the name of Greg Glory was going to be speaking. And as I was listening to Greg speak, he was talking about a commander, and that got my attention as a Navy SEAL. And this commander by the name of Naaman, he had leprosy. Greg began to relate this leprosy to sin. And suddenly, I went from this total numbness to total sensitivity and conviction. I was feeling horrible for the things that I was doing, the things I didn't care about before. And right there that night, I repented of my sin and put my faith and trust in Jesus Christ as my Lord and Savior. The night that I got saved, I realized why becoming a SEAL didn't deliver the ultimate for me. Because just as Scott Helvenston was killed and he was hung from the Euphrates River Bridge for the sake of freedom, even greater than that, Jesus Christ was killed and he was hung from the cross at Calvary so that we could have freedom from sin. Greater love is known than this, and a man that gives his life for his friends. That's what Jesus Christ did for me and for everyone in the world.
All right. That was the trailer for Chad Williams, SEAL of God, and we have Chad with us right now. Mr. Williams, welcome to the Hagman & Hagman Report.
Thank you for having me on, guys. I'm excited to be here with you.
We're excited to have you. And by the way, if you're watching live via YouTube, you can see Mr. Williams right here.
Yeah.
It's great to have him.
As we bring on Chad, I just want to give a special thanks to longtime Hagman & Hagman listener Jessica L. for setting up this interview. Jessica, thank you so much for doing this. This is going to be a fantastic interview. Chad, I had a chance to watch a few of some different speeches you gave talks that you gave. And you have a very, very inspiring story. We didn't have a chance to talk before the show, and I don't know where you want to start today, but your journey and what led you to become a Navy SEAL. In one of the talks you gave, I saw that you went through life early in your life, and you talked about, you know, going through things and quitting, and then this revelation you had about wanting to become a Navy SEAL. Can you talk about that and how, of all things, becoming a Navy SEAL was the goal that you set for yourself?
Sure. I guess I could start kind of by giving some folks a little bit of background about what it is really to be a Navy SEAL. You know, nowadays, I think most people do know what Navy SEALs are, especially after the capture-kill mission of Bin Laden. But, you know, there was a time when, you know, one time a girl asked me if I worked at SeaWorld or something. So just to kind of clarify here, SEAL, maybe your listeners didn't know this, is actually an acronym, and it stands for our areas of operation, sea, air, and land. And I think most people are pretty surprised to find out that we're operating on land. They're expecting us to stick to waterborne operations, but when they find out a guy like Bin Laden was killed by Navy SEALs, I remember the big question that was going around was, you know, what, is there a puddle in Pakistan these guys came crawling out of or something? But, you know, that certainly wasn't the case. We've been operating on land for quite some time. To kind of give your listeners an idea of what my team was doing on my last deployment on land out in Iraq, we were tasked with hunting down men that make suicide vests and those roadside bombs, IEDs. And while we're out there, we decided to work alongside the Iraqi Special Operations Forces. That's called, you know, the ISOF. And one of our goals really was to teach these guys how to fight their own fights. And so really the best way to do that is to not only train them on base, how to shoot on the ranges, do a little bit of close quarters combat. I think the best thing you could do for these guys is to actually go outside the wire and fight side by side with them. And if you can imagine, whole deployment's going by pretty good. You know, we bagged and gagged some bad dudes, and We were coming up on what looked like just enough time on the calendar to do maybe one more operation, and we weren't really sure if the ISOF was ready for us to take off and roll out on them. So we decided for this final operation, let's try and make it a sort of graduation operation. We'll let them plan the whole thing from the ground up, and we'll be there with them just in case things go bad. So they start from scratch. They need some intel. So they hit the streets. They find a source of information that tells them about a man that's an Iraqi policeman. So if you can picture, this guy's a policeman by day, but at night back home, he's one of these bomb makers. And to kind of give you an idea, the type of coward that makes a suicide vest, you know, oftentimes these guys are not the ones that want to strap the vest on themselves. In fact, they have such a difficult time finding somebody to sign up to put on one of these vests that in one instance over there, it just kind of shows how depraved they are. They took two mentally handicapped women, strapped these vests onto them, and shoved them off into a crowded marketplace, watching from a distance like cowards as they set it off with a remote, killing these women and so many more in that market area. So this kind of gives you an idea of the type of characters we're going after here. But, you know, we've got this guy's number, the ISOF. They've identified him. They've come up with this plan, how they want to approach the house, get in, grab the guy, extract. And one other thing they brought up prior to the operation is they said, you know, that, you know, they tend to get shot at more than SEALs, and they think they know why. And their response was they thought it was because of the color of our uniforms. So they're saying, we're wondering for this final operation if you'd be willing to maybe take off your American colored uniforms and, you know, put on some, you know, ISOF colored uniforms. So we're like, all right, sure, we'll do that. And so needless to say, my dark complexion, start growing out a little facial hair, and then get on one of these Iraqi Special Operation Force uniforms. As it turns out, I blend in pretty good with these fellas over there. In fact, my wife will try to motivate me to shave when the beard's getting a little long. She says, all right, Chad, it's time to cut it down because you look like you belong in Bin Laden's family or something. So it's true. So here we go, blending in with these guys, and I happen to be standing behind the 50 caliber machine gun that night. I'm standing up in the Humvee, a little section we call the turret. I've got my night vision goggles on. I'm looking through my green little world. I'm just kind of going over the usual mental inventory. I've got all these checks going off in my head. I know where this guy lives. I know how we're getting in. I know how we're grabbing him. I know how we're getting out. All these I knows, but there was one unique I know about this operation that was different than every other operation. I know this is the last operation, which also means I know just a matter of days from now, I'm going to be back home, Huntington Beach, California. That's my hometown, surfing in the ocean. But what none of us really knew about that night was we were actually being set up the entire time to get thrown in the absolute worst circumstances we'd been in on this entire deployment, as we were being set up on an ambush and really getting involved in a gunfight for our lives. Now, before I touch on what happened, you know, that night, I want to backtrack a little bit to what you mentioned, you know, my road to becoming a Navy SEAL. Fresh out of high school, going into the local community college, I guess you could say I tasted a little bit of identity in skateboarding. I was sponsored by a popular shoe company, Vans Shoes. I was doing some competing, but eventually I just kind of got burned out on it. It wasn't something that really did it for me anymore. And so next thing I know, I find myself failing all of my classes in this junior college, and really it's just because I wasn't attending. I'm ditching, partying, surfing with friends, and I'm coming up on the end of the year, and it just hits me like a ton of bricks as I'm driving into the school parking lot about to take finals I didn't study for. I'm not going to make it this year. I just realized, well, I'm turning out to be a loser. I mean, the kind of guy that no young man wants to be. And so I'm thinking, you know, what am I going to do with my life? How am I going to turn this around? I want to do something big. I want to do something great. I just didn't know what that was. I didn't really have the vision. And so as I'm brainstorming, thinking, you know, what is it? I think I come up with the perfect plan as I'm sitting there in my truck, the school parking lot, about to take these tests. The perfect plan is I'm going to go become an Alaskan crab fisherman. And I'm thinking, ooh, deadliest catch by far, one of the most dangerous jobs in the world. There's some bragging rights in that. And I almost settled in on that when this other idea pops into my head. I go, wait a minute, no. Why can't I go join the military? And not just that, I want to be a part of the most elite. I want to go through the most difficult, grueling military training, and it entered my mind. I know what I want to be. I want to be a U.S. Navy SEAL. And so right there, that school parking lot, I'm about to go take these tests. I just make up my mind, that's what I'm doing with my life. I'm going to be a Navy SEAL. And so my first order of business is this. If I'm going to be a frogman, that means I don't need to go to class anymore. And so I started my truck up and took off out of that school parking lot, and never wound up taking those tests. But as you can imagine, I had some bad news and good news to share with my dad. And, you know, the bad news, I obviously filled him in on the fact that I'm not making it at school. I'm failing all my classes. All that time you thought I was going, I really wasn't necessarily there. But the good news, Dad, it's okay. I got a plan. I'm going to be a Navy SEAL. And you could just put yourself probably in my dad's shoes at that moment. He's looking at me, kind of watching the track record of my life up to that point, and just trying to be the voice of reason. I remember him saying, Chad, joining the military is not like anything you've ever done, son. It's not like playing ball or skateboarding or going to the local community college that when you decide you're over it, you could just stop. He says, if you join the military and maybe you find out it's not for you, or suppose you quit SEAL training. He says, you know what's going to happen to you? You can't just get out of the military. You're going to find yourself stuck in the military, chipping paint off some boat in Japan. Well, he certainly had a point, and I did not like the sound of those words, and I just kind of harnessed that. I used that as motivation. That was not going to be me. And so there was something really invisible going on, I think, underneath it all that obviously he couldn't see at the time. It's a mindset. I predetermined in my mind that I was willing to die before I ever gave up and rang that bell to quit SEAL training. But, you know, that's my mindset. Those are my words, and actions speak louder than words. So sort of typical young father-son relationship. We weren't really seeing eye to eye. What do? You know, well, I split off. You know, whatever, Dad, you don't get it. But meanwhile, I was preparing. I was doing all the running, swimming, pull-ups, push-ups, everything I could do to get ready to go into BUDS, which stands for Basic Underwater Demolition SEAL Training. And as some time went by, and you guys can feel free to interrupt me at any time. I don't want to go on like a totally long monologue.
Oh no, I love this. We're both just watching you and just astounded by the information. The only thing we will say is, folks, you're listening to Chad Williams, Navy SEAL, and these incredible stories. So thank you. Continue, please.
Okay, so I'm getting ready to go in, and I think after a while my dad could tell that I'm taking this pretty serious, and so he invites me back up into the house, and he says, you really want to do this, huh? You want to be a SEAL? I'm thinking he's getting on board. Like, yeah, Dad, I want to be a SEAL. He goes, great. I set up a workout for you with the Navy SEAL. Check out my computer screen. And I'll never forget glancing over at the computer screen and seeing this little one-liner in an email. All it says is this: can Chad come out and play tomorrow? And I'm thinking, like, play? Like, Dad, you met some guy on the internet that says he wants to play with me, and you're arranging this? Oh, no, he's a SEAL, Chad. And I'm just like, Dad, you can't believe anything somebody just tells you on the web. And he's insisting, no, this guy really is a SEAL. I'm like, okay, fine, I'll go meet up with this guy. And so what really happened, I didn't know about this at the time. My dad had spent some time on the phone with this Navy SEAL by the name of Scott Helvenston prior to that email. And so when he gets on the phone with them, he was telling him, hey, look, my son wants to be this Navy SEAL, and I'm wondering if you could just do me a real big favor. Would you be willing to meet up with my son? And I'm asking you to crush him, just to bury him, beat this desire of becoming a SEAL out of him. And so I didn't know about that part. And so off I go to Oceanside, California, meet up with this Navy SEAL by the name of Scott Helvenston in a beachside parking lot. And I remember him spotting me right away. You, Chad? And I'm in the crosshairs of the SEAL now. Yes, he goes, all right, Bubba. I was Bubba from that point forward. Get on over here. And so Scott's got me doing some calisthenics, some push-ups, pull-ups, and sit-ups, things that I'd been working on. I'm hanging in there. And there's another guy that was there that he's a Marine, but he's going to re-enlist into the military, into the Navy. He's an aspiring SEAL. He wants to go down that route. And so I think this was like really my first exposure to being around any guys in the military. And so I've got this Marine, I've got this Navy SEAL. I'm really trying to size myself up. I'm a young guy. You know, I think I was like 18 years old at the time, maybe just turning 19. Kind of a cocky, arrogant kid. As soon as I realize I'm hanging in there with these guys, I start getting puffed up. And Scott says, you know, all right, Bubba, referring to me and this other guy. He says, you know, why don't you and this fellow Seth, you guys go for a run out to the wetlands. I've got some gear to clean up back here at the truck. But you know, Seth, lead the way first 15 minutes, and after 15 minutes, Bubba, you go ahead, take over, you go as fast as you want to go. And so, as it turns out, Seth was one of these real big, muscular, brute force kind of guys, which is great for plowing a door over or carrying a heavy load. But, you know, when it comes to running at a fast pace, a great distance, you know, that's not really the physique you want, right? You want to be a wiry guy, and that's what I was at the time. I'm like 145 pounds, soaking wet. I'm like a gazelle. Ray, just take off on this guy. And so 15 minutes into the run, we're trotting along. It's my time to take the lead. And so here I go. I'm just taking off. And like I said, arrogant young guy. I'm thinking I'm going to burn this Marine. He's not going to keep up with me. I'm looking back. He just disappears in this trail. I don't even know where the final destination is. All I know is I'm running down this trail into the wetlands, and like civilization is getting, you know, thinner and thinner here. And then I'm looking back thinking, where's this Navy SEAL? And so it enters my mind that I'm going to beat this Navy SEAL. I'm going to beat this Marine on the run. I remember thinking of the names of my buddies I was going to be bragging to, how these guys couldn't catch up to me on the run. And then I look back over my shoulder again, and it was just like the movie Terminator 2. There's a scene, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger and the bad guy called the T-1000, where this T-1000, the machine, can like morph into these knife hands and like chase down a moving vehicle. Well, suddenly, you know, that's the Navy SEAL, Scott Helvenson, like a T-1000 coming down this trail. And there's nothing I can do. He's closing the distance. He catches right up to where I am. I mean, I'm running so fast. Some listeners might know this feeling where you don't even have time to spit at the wrong moment because it could throw off your breathing rhythm, right? But he just blazes. He catches right up to me, gets past me on this trail, and then I never saw what was coming next. He just stops and turns around on a dime, and I'm coming into him full speed as I'm greeted by his fist going right into my stomach, just impaled. I am clotheslined, feet coming off the ground. I remember the feeling of the wind being knocked out of me before my back hit the ground. And then this poof of dirt just up all around me from that trail. And then put yourself in my shoes for a moment here. Remember, the only background knowledge I had at the time was some guy my dad met on the internet. Now I'm in the wetlands. It's all coming together like Child Predator, I'm thinking. He's on top of me, just ragdolling me in the ground. I remember the sounds of the threads of my shirt ripping, his spit flying out of his mouth because he's screaming in my face, just going ballistic. And then I heard these words come out of his mouth. He says, "You want to be a Navy SEAL, you better stay three paces behind me." And that's when it hit me, like, whoa, this is it. This is for real. I knew that if I quit right now, I'll forever be a quitter. The way I respond in this moment is going to affect the trajectory of the rest of my life. And so I just reaffirm that attitude. I am dying before I quit. And so he gets up off me and says it again. Three paces, he turns and just begins to run. And so I'm going after this guy. And this goes on for a handful of miles down this trail. And I'll just tell you what, looking back in hindsight, after having gone through SEAL training, which is arguably the most difficult military training there is in the world, hands down, looking back, I never went through a more difficult singular workout, or I should say beatdown session, than this encounter with Scott. But we finally get to this point where he stops. He circles up, and I'm just thinking, oh, it's great. You know, the run's over. And he's kind of pacing back and forth. He's eyeballing me. He's got these piercing eyes. And I'm kind of catching that. This guy, he almost looks like he wants to rip me apart right now. He looks like one of these UFC cage fighters just ready to get it on. And so I'm thinking in my head, like, okay, I don't want to set this guy off. So I remember kind of looking off to the side and thinking, okay, Chad, don't set this guy off. Just, you know, no direct eye contact. Just use your peripherals, you know. And I'm kind of looking off, and he breaks this awkward tension. He says, "Hey, if we would have gone another mile or two, would you have stayed with me?" And that's why I told him, I said, "Scott, I'll die before I quit." And he just loosens up. He goes, "Great, well, you want to meet up again for another workout tomorrow?" And I'm thinking in my mind, like, are we going to discuss whatever that was on the trail, a flashback or whatever, like, but I just find myself agreeing, like, okay, I'll meet up again for another workout. So, all right, great, set. So I'm going back home, and you know, I'm kind of feeling a little humiliated here at first. I mean, I just got the tar beat out of me by this Navy SEAL, but what am I going to do? He's a Navy SEAL. I'm just like this, you know, college dropout punk kid. And as I'm going home, everything kind of shifts a little bit. I begin to realize that, you know what? I made it through a Navy SEAL workout, and I can do this again tomorrow. I'll do it again the next day after that. So I kind of go from this attitude of feeling kind of down, dragging my feet, to I'm excited. I'm clicking my heels. And as I'm reaching for that front door, as I get home, of course, you know, my dad can't wait to find out how his little arrangement went. And so I'm reaching for that door. He's pulling it open. He's got this big smile on his face. "How did it go, son?" And I'm letting him know, "Dad, I'm going to be a Navy SEAL." And I just see this look of this draining look on his face, like, what? And I didn't know what that was about. And I go walk past him. And come to find out later, you know, that he had kind of arranged this whole big setup. So he's getting on the phone with Scott, And he goes, hey, what's going on? I thought you were going to crush him. He came home. He wanted to be a SEAL more now than ever. And apparently that's where Scott told him, look, I know, and I gave it a go, but I think your son might have what it takes to make it. And if you don't mind, I'd like to start meeting up with him. So from that day forward, I began to meet up with this Navy SEAL, Scott Helvenston, virtually every single day. And thankfully, wow, it was no longer a beatdown. It became more of a building up. And I moved on from just being Bubba to eventually I became Junior. He really took me under his wing. He was like a second father to me. And I just idolized everything about this guy. He's everything that I want to be. He's not just a Navy SEAL. He's an extraordinary Navy SEAL. Guy holds all kinds of records, and we'll get into those in a little bit after the break.
A legend. Well, fantastic opener here. Folks, you're listening to the Hagman and Hagman Report. Our guest tonight is Mr. Chad Williams. His website, Navy SEAL, ChadWilliams.com. That's Navy SEAL, ChadWilliams.com. About a month ago, David Thomas joined us. He was the author of Seal of God. The book is about Mr. Chad Williams, and folks, you can go to NavySealChadWilliams.com and check out under books The Seal of God. We'll be right back after this. We're going to continue to talk about Chad and his experience in Navy SEAL training, as well as his deployments and what led him to where he is today. Stay with us. We'll be right back. We're so blessed to have with us Chad Williams, a Navy SEAL, Chad Williams, sharing his testimony and sharing some really important information, a lesson for all of us. You talk about information and inspiration tied together, joined at the hip. That is what we're engaging in. That's what we're being treated to today, right now. My goodness. And it's only going to get better. Before we get back to our guest, I want to bring your attention. You've got 3 days, folks. Hey, this is a clarion call. What happens in 3 days? Do you know what happens in 3 days? Well, you've got 3 days to order from Greenovative. You know the G-Mag battery charger, right? The G-Mag charger, the affordable, lightweight, durable, EMP-proof, environmentally friendly, unbelievable. I can't believe this thing charges batteries. That device, the G-Mag battery charger, with magnesium power pucks, you know that thing from Greenovative, the device that I think everyone needs to have in their bug out bag or in their pantry, if you will. Folks, go to greenovative.com, greenovative.com, or go to hagmanreport.com. Click on the link to Greenovative, because between now and Thursday is a cutoff day for delivery by Christmas. 15% off your entire purchase. And well, Thursday, you got to order by Thursday for guaranteed Christmas delivery. These are flying off the shelves. Folks, when planning for a disaster, a must-have is a good supply of batteries. Throwaway batteries, you know, the kind you buy at Walmart or whatever, they're going to go dead either by sitting on the shelf or during use, and a dead battery is good to no one. Greenovative has the solution. With a little salt, a little water, and this device, you can have an endless supply of recharged batteries just by replacing the magnesium power pucks. It's affordable. It's a fantastic device. It's one of those things I wish I would have thought of that, but I slept through science class, apparently, that class in school. Greenovative, what a great product, the G-Mag battery charger. Again, it's affordable, it's lightweight, and it's you don't need sun, you don't need wind, you don't have to hand crank anything, you don't need to feed a little chipmunk or a rodent that goes on a wheel. All you need is an ordinary table salt and a little water, shake for a few seconds, and the unit instantly makes electricity. You can use this to power up your cell phones, rechargeable batteries. It's got no moving parts, and it's able to provide enough power to charge about 130 batteries per pair of power pucks, which are replaceable. So, between now and Thursday, get them by Thursday,
So as soon as this show's over, go to greeninnovative.com or HagmanReport.com, click on the link to Green Innovative, and enjoy your 15% discount and Christmas guaranteed delivery. And by the way, this has got a no-hassle warranty on it, this device. Since its inception, no one has taken advantage of that warranty. That tells you what a quality product it is. Greeninnovative.com, greeninnovative.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are speaking with Navy SEAL Chad Williams. His website is NavySealChadWilliams.com. Before the break, Chad, you were telling us a story about the Navy SEAL workout, the toughest workout you went through when coming to know that you wanted to do this and be a part of the Navy SEALs and join the Navy SEALs. And your dad had set up a workout for you. It ended up being a very grueling workout, but that gave you the determination to understand and realize this is what you're going to do, and you said that you'd rather die than quit. So you want to pick up where you left off?
Sure. And so just to fill folks in that maybe weren't there for the first segment, that workout was with a former U.S. Navy SEAL by the name of Scott Helvenston, and it was more of a beatdown session than a workout, and it was a test. His goal really was to crush me, to beat the desire of becoming a SEAL out of me. But by the end of it, I was still there, and I was telling him I'll die before I quit. And I think he took a liking to me, because then he wanted to meet up from that point forward. And we began to meet up virtually every single day. And thankfully, it was no longer a beatdown session. It became more of a building up, and I moved on from just being a guy he was calling Bubba to eventually I became Junior. He was like a second father to me. And I idolize this guy. He's everything that I want to be. I mean, Scott's no ordinary Navy SEAL, if there ever were such a thing. He holds all kinds of records. He's a world champion pentathlete. That's five events in comparison to the triathlon you see sometimes on television. He's the youngest man to ever make it through SEAL training. He made it through at 17 years old. That was only possible because he grew up in over dozens of different foster homes. And so the military took him at a very early age. He finished SEAL training by 17. I'm pretty confident no one will ever beat that record. I hope no one has to go through the life circumstances that lead up to even making it possible. On top of that, he's also the fastest Navy SEAL on the SEAL training obstacle course. So to kind of put that in perspective for the listeners, every single Navy SEAL that ever was, that is, or will be, has to go through an obstacle course that we have in Coronado, San Diego. And we all are timed on it. The time is recorded. And we go through this multiple times. You have, you know, countless attempts. There is not a single Navy SEAL on the face of this planet. You think Navy SEALs are pretty bad dudes? Not a single other Navy SEAL could beat this Navy SEAL I'm talking about, Scott Helvenston, running through an obstacle course. And, you know, if that doesn't do it for you, here's one more record, a funny one. At the time, you know, Scott was the only man to ever beat the Beast on a TV program, Man vs. Beast. And what it was these Hollywood producers would take a wild animal, a beast, and put them up against a human being in a competition of strength or speed. And on this show, every time, hands down, the beast would win, the human would look like a fool. Well, apparently these Hollywood producers found out about Scott Helvenston, the Navy SEAL that could run this obstacle course at superhuman speed. So they decide, you know, let's have him on the show. And for the beast, they pick a chimpanzee. And they decide, we're going to build an obstacle course, and we're going to train this chimpanzee to run through it superhuman speed. So, of course, you know, Scott doesn't really stand a chance. This is a chimpanzee. I mean, this is just a whole other world. You know, chimp versus human being obstacles. And they get Scott on the phone. They say, hey, you know, we hear you're something special. You want to go up against the beast on Man vs. Beast? Well, Scott, being the kind of guy to never back down, he's like, yeah, I'll race the monkey. And so he shows up. And they've got all the different camera angles going. I remember I'm sitting in the truck with Scott. He's telling me this story. He's got his arm up there in the wheel of the car. We're driving along. I'm idolizing this guy. He's just everything that I want to be. I'm listening to these cool stories. And he's telling me how, you know, boom, they're off. And they're going over the high wall, the cargo net, the rope swing. And the irony of it all is that by the time they're getting to those monkey bars, Scott's way ahead of this monkey. And he was the only man to beat the beast on this TV program, Man vs. Beast. And I remember he was laughing and telling me, he goes, you know, Junior, you know, all those other programs where the beast wins the human being, the athlete on the show, they re-air them. They rerun them on TV all the time. He goes, my show, they made me rematch the beast two times. I beat it. Then they didn't want to air it. I insisted that they have to air it. And they only showed it on television one time. No reruns, just one time. And so, you know, you can imagine, I'm having a phenomenal time. You know, I'm getting trained up by this extraordinary Navy SEAL. He's really building me up, being the servant leader, developing me, really took me under his wing. But my time with him was coming to a close because I've got a date. It's set. I signed up for the military. I'm going to be shipping out. And one of the ways Scott and I wrap up a workout together was we just go down to the local community pool, and at the end of the day, he'd teach me how to do some underwater knot tying, some technique for holding my breath longer, just stuff for SEAL training. But eventually, we get around to talking about whatever we got going on in life. And, you know, I remember he brought up this opportunity, he put it, to go overseas again. And he was kind of teetering on whether or not he wanted to do it. It would be, you know, just a couple months, and, you know, who knows? He says, who knows, Junior? Perhaps I could make a difference. He was very hungry for the opportunity to go and advance freedom. Not only freedom as we know it here in America, but remember Scott's childhood, growing up in all these different foster homes. Really, one of the things that was on the front of his mind, on his heart, was children. And that was very evident. I mean, as soon as he would come outside that front door of the neighborhood, all the neighborhood kids would come flocking to him because he really did take on that father role for each of them. He was like a second father to all of them. Really took him under his wing. And so he's saying, you know, who knows, Junior, perhaps I can make a difference. On the front of his mind, children caught in the midst of it all in the Middle East. And so he wasn't sure if he wanted to do it. I get a phone call from him days later, and he's informing me he's going to do it. He says, all right, Junior, about to go do this thing, referring to going to Iraq. And he says, I just want you to know something. I've never told anybody I've ever trained before. And it actually kind of gives me chills because I'm at my parents' house right now, and I'm in my old room, and I'm just feet away from where I was when I was on the phone with Scott. He is telling me these words right here. I'll never forget. He says, I know you're going to make it through SEAL training. And to hear those words from Scott, I mean, what could I say? That meant the world to me.
Wow.
And so it just gave me all the confidence in the world that, you know, I'm going to do this. And so he's just reminding me now, you know, the timeline. He's only going to be gone a couple months. I'm about to do Navy boot camp. That's a couple months. He says, by the time he gets back, I'll be starting up SEAL training. He says, you know, we're going to see you make it through. And so we say our goodbyes. And, you know, all right, Scott, you know, I'll see you when you get back. And so now Scott's gone, and I'm about to go off to Navy boot camp. I just have a handful of days left before I go. So I figure, you know, if I can't work out with my mentor in person, the next best thing to that is to work out with him through some of these programs that he set up for me. And so I'm waking up one day, and, you know, I'm turning on the television, about ready to get a workout going. And on the screen, that's where I see a picture of Scott's face. It's a picture from Smiling. Sort of a typical still image, profile shot that they would use, you know, a headshot of someone before they're going to go on a program. And so that was my first thought, is what's Scott doing on TV? He didn't let me know he's going to be on TV for something. And as I'm looking at this picture of him smiling, that's where I see in the lower third of the screen Scott's birth date followed by a dash, and it says March 31st, 2004. And before I can even comprehend in my mind what that meant, this still image of Scott, of him smiling, changes, and now it cuts to video footage. And I'm looking at him thousands of miles away through a television screen. He's laying in the street of Fallujah, Iraq, a burning vehicle in the background. And what had happened was very similar to what we have going on today. With ISIS and these premeditated attacks where they take out the video cameras and, you know, they film as they're beheading people or setting that Jordanian pilot on fire and sending the footage around for the media to play. I'm watching as these insurgents had a premeditated attack. It was an ambush. Scott and three other Americans, their vehicles burning in the background, their bodies are in the streets, and now they've got sticks and rods. And I'm watching this video montage of these Iraqis with sticks and rods just going crazy, you know, beating and wailing away on these bodies with sticks and rods, just mutilating them, and then finding rope and wrapping around their legs, hooking them up to a vehicle, dragging them through the streets of Fallujah, Iraq, and ultimately getting to the Euphrates River Bridge, stringing their bodies upside down, setting their bodies on fire. And then as they burn in the background, they're looking into a camera and they're chanting in Arabic, Fallujah is the graveyard of Americans, just over and over, Fallujah is the graveyard of Americans. And I'll just tell, you know, the folks listening that I'll never have the words to describe what that moment was like watching that.
Man.
I mean, needless to say, it radically changed me as a human being big time. And, man, I felt like, I don't know. I don't have the words. I'll never have the words. It changed me. And my family, you know, now they're beginning to see what's going on. This was big news. I think that everyone's familiar with it. March 14th, 2007, the Blackwater contractors that hung from the bridge. And you know, first it's that shock, and then they're looking at me knowing I'm just days away from going in to boot camp, and now they're terrified, thinking maybe the same thing could happen to me. And so I understand now, looking back, you know, being a father now, I get it. You know, after seeing that, you know, and Scott became a close friend of the family, so they knew him intimately too. So seeing him and then looking at your son, I mean, me personally, I would think, man, I don't want my kid to go into this. Now, if that could happen to him, it could happen to my child. And so they're begging me, please don't go, don't do this. And they're saying, you know, what would Scott say to you? You know, what would he tell you if he could come back? He would tell you not to do this. And so now I'm kind of I'm torn. I'm really puzzled. Like, what do I do here? And there's, you know, this sense of revenge and rage that I have inside. And I just determined that, you know, I'm still going to do this. But I want to do it for so much more now. Like, one of the biggest motivating factors for me is that I want to do this in honor and memory of Scott. I just felt like my life is so unsettled, disoriented. This is such a horrible thing that happened. I have no peace. That, you know, maybe when I become a Navy SEAL, you know, maybe when I fill his shoes, when I do this in honor and memory of him, that's where I'll get that peace. That's where life, you know, really begins.
Right.
And so I set out to do it. You know, I'm going to be a Navy SEAL. And so I make it through Navy boot camp and finally get my shot at SEAL training. It's called BUDS. It stands for Basic Underwater Demolition SEAL Training. Like I said earlier, arguably by far the most difficult military training there is in the world, hands down. To kind of give folks an idea of just how tough it is, I'll share with them the most difficult part of training. It's called Hell Week. And Hell Week in a nutshell goes like this. It's 5.5 days long, and you get 4 hours of sleep. That's not 4 hours of sleep per night. That's a grand total of sleep, 4 hours, for the next 5.5 days. From the moment that Hell Week begins, these instructors are waking you up with, you know, machine guns going off, grenade simulators. You got all these big noises. Your ears are ringing. You know, there's these, you know, flashes of light everywhere. And this is sort of the exciting part because you have this adrenaline rush going on, almost like you feel no pain. There's nothing that they could do to you to make you quit at that moment. Virtually nobody quits at that moment. This is sort of an exciting hoorah, like beginning of it. It's called breakout. And so after breakout's over, though, and they're hitting you with these hoses, I went through in February where, you know, that air temperature and the water temperature is the coldest. The air is so cold it bites, and then you get hit with these hoses, and you begin to go through those shivers. But now the worst part is about to happen. We're about to leave all the lights, all the flashing, and, you know, anybody that might be watching, it's kind of a spectacle. Now we're going to go out into that cold, dark ocean and perform what's called surf torture. And surf torture is kind of like it sounds. It's torture in the surf zone. That water is so cold in February, it takes your breath away. And you do not get to wear a wetsuit. You link up with your buddies. You link arms. You go walking out into that water. And then the instructors love to get inside your heads. They play these head games, and they always win these head games. They'll say something like, you know, we're not letting you guys out of the water. We're going to keep cycling you through until they just come up with the number. Three of you give up and quit. And these are some very tough men on your left and on your right. They've all vowed the same thing that you'll vow, I'll die before I quit. And there's no external indication that these guys don't really mean it. And so now this is really a test. You know, who really wants it more? And so that water, so cold, you begin to, they call it jackhammering. You look like you're hanging on to a jackhammer. And I remember during those surf tortures, that really was where I had to dig the deepest. And one of the things that really motivated me was Scott. I think about Scott. I think about my family. I think about never calling them and telling them I couldn't make it. The call was going to be 5.5 days from now. Hey, I made it. And so that was definitely some of the toughest times during Hell Week, these surf tortures. The instructors always got the number that they were going for. And I lost track of how many times we played this game of surf torture. It's not something you do once or twice or just a few times. You're continually doing it throughout these 5.5 days. And the instructors always won those competitions. And it'll just get tougher and tougher. I mean, think about it. You're dealing with guys in the fourth, fifth, sixth round of a surf torture that didn't quit in the previous rounds when other people quit. And so the cream is really, you know, rising to the top here. If you're not in the water performing surf torture, you run over 200 miles during these 5.5 days. And that's not just running around with your own body weight. That's running around with the weight of a boat wherever you go. And most of the time, you're carrying that boat on top of your head with your boat crew. And it kind of gives you an idea of how great is the pressure of that boat on your head. It rubs through the hair and through the skin in the top of your head. Everyone has a round, circular, bald sore spot. And in a class prior to mine, there's a guy who broke his neck underneath one of these boats. It's some serious pressure on top of your head. And, you know, you run over 200 miles with this boat, or you got a telephone log wherever you go. And then just imagine during these 5.5 days, people don't think about this, but you're wet the entire time, salt water wet. And you've probably been in a pool or a jacuzzi for a few hours, and you look down at your hands and they begin to look a little pruny, and you're like, time to get out. My fingers are getting a little soggy. Imagine what 5.5 days of salt water does to your skin, mixed in with beach sand, rubbing and grinding in all the unfriendly places. I'll just say every square inch of your body, you feel the nerves exposed. And then on top of all this physical exertion and sleep deprivation, you know, it leads into kind of a funny one to look back on it now, hallucination. I remember the last night of Hell Week, you know, you've been physically exerted, you know, at this point. I mean, you're at your wit's end, and now you've been kept awake for so long, you enter into hallucination. And I grew up watching Ninja Turtles. And we're paddling around in the water, and the strangest things, they always seem to happen out there in the water for everybody. I'm paddling along, and I'm looking down in the water, and grew up watching Ninja Turtles. I see Donatello coming up out of the water and looking at me. And, I mean, this is so real, I know it's wrong, that I'm trying to whack him with my paddle. But, of course, I'm not getting them. You know, and then another Ninja Turtle, like Leonardo or Raphael, you know, popping up out of the water. And I'm, like, whacking him with my paddle. And we're in the middle of a boat race right now. So I remember one of the guys chiming in and saying, Williams, you know, what are you doing? Because I should be paddling right now, and I'm whacking the water. And I don't know what to tell him. I just confess what I see. I'm like, dude, turtles in a half shell. Like, I see Ninja Turtles. And I thought the guy was going to be like, you know, you knucklehead. But he goes, where? And he starts looking for him in the water. You know, of course, you know, we're not going to see the same thing. But you know, that's one of those things. Looking back on it, it's hilarious. But, you know, when you're going through it, it really is. It's torture on the mind. So what I just shared with everybody is a little 5.5 day snapshot of about a 2-year-long pipeline to make it through SEAL training. So I think I can kind of summarize, you know, how difficult is SEAL training? You've heard that term, the numbers speak for themselves. Out of a class of 173 guys that I started with, and we're all vowing the same thing that, you know, we'll die before we quit. Out of those 173 guys, by graduation day, we only had 13 of that original class number still standing there at that graduation day. I mean, this is the moment. This is that time where, you know, in that first segment I talk about, man, if I could just become a Navy SEAL, I'm sitting there in that school parking lot and thinking, if I could become a SEAL, I'll be set for life. And then on top of that, doing this, you know, in honor and memory of Scott, I've got my family members, my friends there. I remember where I was walking out on the grinder, exactly where I was I just kind of stopped for a moment and looked up and thought, Scott, we did this. I had his name written on the inside of my hat as his constant reminder and motivation to make it through. And that moment where I'm getting the trident, the insignia pinned in my chest, not only was this one of the happiest, proudest, most fulfilling moments of my life, where everything is just expected to begin from this point forward, but really strangely, within the same 24-hour period, I went from the highest high to what felt like one of the lowest lows. And things just seemed to continue to go downhill from there. I felt like I was just circling a drain. And I could not comprehend why at the time. Years later, I heard these words spoken by a Christian philosopher named Ravi Zacharias. And I'm on the radio, listening on the radio as he says these words. And I thought, man, those words right there, they hit the nail on the head. That is exactly what I experienced graduation day. Finally, I have words. And this is what he says. He says, one of the loneliest moments a man will ever experience is when he's achieved that which he thought would deliver the ultimate. And in the end, it lets him down. One of the loneliest moments a man will ever experience when he's achieved that which he thought would deliver the ultimate, in the end, it lets him down. What he's referring to right there is something that I think everyone listening is familiar with, at least to some degree. Let me break it down for you. It's the human condition. It's that whole idea that the grass is always greener on the other side. I mean, how many of us have been there where, you know, we're not real happy, we're not real content with where we're at, but, you know, that's okay, because we got plans, we got goals. And once I get to that achievement over there, I accept I'm not satisfied here, but I'll have that fulfillment when I get to that point. You know, once I get that trophy, once I get that education, once I get that position at work, that salary, once I get that house, once I get that relationship. And so, no, we're not happy where we're at right now, but we've got plans. The grass is greener on the other side over there. And so what happens is you develop a hunger for that goal, for that achievement. And that hunger leads to some good things. It leads to the drive, the discipline that ultimately gets you there. I mean, have you ever achieved that success? Have you ever tasted it? You know, you eat it up and you are satisfied just like you thought you would be. But what happens? The satisfaction doesn't last, does it? So what do? Well, you don't hit the panic switch. You just kind of step back for a moment. You introspect a little, like, okay, what's going on here? And you come to the realization. A light bulb goes on. Aha! The reason it didn't give me lasting satisfaction is because I didn't set my sights high enough. If I really want it to last, to deliver that kind of lasting fulfillment for me, I need to raise the bar. I need to go up to the next rung of the ladder, trek up the mountain a little bit higher. And so what do? You raise that bar, you're going to the next totem on the totem pole, and you finally get there. You're thirsting after it, you get there, you drink it up, you're satisfied just like you thought you would be, and then what happens? You get hungry, you get thirsty, all over again. And it's just a vicious cycle. Seemingly, there is no end, but that's the catch. Listen, there is an end point, and this is the point of that quote. One of the loneliest moments a man will ever experience when he's achieved that which he thought would deliver the ultimate, and in the end it lets him down. See, the big question is this. What happens when you finally arrive at a place where you no longer can step back like all those other times and just introspect and think, okay, I know what I'll do. I'll just raise the bar. I'll just go to the next level. You're no longer in a place like that because you're at the last rung of the ladder. There is no next. You're at the peak of the mountain. You can't set your sights to something else. In fact, a billionaire was asked this question in Forbes magazine. He was asked, sir, if you could go back in time and give yourself a word of advice, what would it be? And this guy's response, he says, you know what I'd do? I'd go back to myself and say, hey, self, when you get to the top of the mountain, there's nothing up there. And so these are not the kinds of things that, we as Americans like to hear. It's like, wow, what a downer, But look, this is a reality. I mean, look at the lives of the movie stars, the professional athletes, these, people that seemingly have everything that the world has to offer. And what do we see them doing with their lives? We're scratching our heads. Why are they doing drugs? Why are they wrecking their lives with alcohol? Why are they committing suicide? Well, I would suggest because they have experienced everything that the world has to offer. And I'd say that ignorance sometimes is bliss. Let me put it this way. I felt like I was better off not being a Navy SEAL and looking forward to becoming a Navy SEAL. Because at least then I had something to invest into. The delusion that something will, deliver for me the ultimate. It was something that drove me. But now that I realize that I have arrived and I'm still just the same person, but worse, I have nothing next. That's where you get those words, one of the loneliest moments a man will ever experience. When he's achieved that which he thought would deliver the ultimate, in the end, it lets him down. Where do I go from here?
The courtship.
We're going to pick up on that, I think, in the next segment.
Chad, it's sometimes the courtship is, often more exciting than the marriage, so to speak. And I understand that. And during this segment, you had me laughing and tearing up at the same, at different times. And wow, what a folks, are you taking this in? I mean, this is fantastic. Wow.
We're talking with Chad Williams. His website is Navy SEAL, ChadWilliams.com, and the book by David Thomas and Chad Williams, Seal of God, is available there. We'll be right back with our third and final hour after these messages. Stay with us.